and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online and having technical issues, remember that you can listen to the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. And to those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome, and thank you so much for tuning in. This is our 8th episode of On Sacred Ground, broadcasting live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific, on this February 14th, 2015. In this episode, we'll be discussing animal helping spirits, popularly called power animals, spirit animals, totem animals, and today is a call-in show, so if you have any questions or thoughts or comments on this topic, please do call in to 657-383-0525 and dial 1 so that I know that you're in the queue, as I'd love to have you on. As we do every show, we'll be beginning this episode with a poem from the book Earth Prayers from Around the World. 365 prayers, poems, and invocations for honoring the earth. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow not to kill. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not take that which is given. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not engage in abusive relationships. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not speak falsely or deceptively. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not harm self or others through poisonous thought or substance. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not dwell on past errors. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not speak of self separate from others. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not possess anything or form of life selfishly. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not harbor ill will toward any plant, animal, or human being. Knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, we vow to not abuse the great truth of the three treasures. And this poem comes from Stephanie Kaza, Green Gulch Farm. And for those of you who listen regularly, you might know that I actually choose these poems based on the divination technique of bibliomancy. And I do believe that our poem last week came from Stephanie Kaza of Green Gulch Farm. It might very well be that Stephanie Kaza of Green Gulch Farm is on Sacred Ground Spirit Animal. In the Western world, one of the things we refer to in pop culture and the place where sort of New Age culture and mainstream culture meet is this idea of spirit animals, which, to be honest, I think we have a bit of a grasp on. You know, we know that this idea, prevalent in traditional cultures from ancient to present times, has something to do with our own resonance with a non-human animal being. We've got that part right for sure. That something might be a reflection of personality traits or even an ancestral connection to an animal. Some of our ancestors had such profound relationships with certain animals that the line between that ancestor and that animal can be a bit blurred. And I know that we talked about this a bit during our episode about land spirits, and this happens as well. We are, again, so intertwined. So in this episode, I'll be covering a number of different facets of how animal spirits have shown up in my life and in my practice as someone who sort of walks the road between folk magic and hoodoo root work and shamanic practice.
How's the writing going, Foz?
Oh, boy, I didn't know it'd be that tough, Harry.
Oh, well, you know, you write a lot of stuff.
No, not really. No, well, I write songs.
Oh, yeah, they're terrific. Hey, how do you get ideas for all those songs?
Well, they don't come easily. You have to get inspired.
Mm.
And like the song we're going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that song in Africa. I was in a country called Guinea. And I went deep into the interior of the country. And in a little village, I met with a storyteller. And that storyteller went way back into African tradition and to African mythology. And he began to tell the story about the fire,
uh-huh.
which means the sun, about the water, and about the earth. And he pointed out that all of these things put together turn the world around. And that all of us, we're here for a very, very short time. And in that time that we're here, there really isn't any difference in any of us if we were to take time out to understand each other. And the question is, do I know who you are? Do you know who I am? Do we care about each other? Because if we do, together we can turn the world around.
He comes from the fire, living in the fire. Go back to the fire, turn the world around.
We come from the fire, go back to the fire, turn the world around.
We come from the fire, living
from
in the fire. Go back to the fire, turn the world around. From the water, living in the water, go back to the water, turn the world around. We come from the water, living in the water, go back to the water, turn the world around. We come from the water, living in the water, go back to the water, turn the world around. From the mountain, living on the mountain, go back to the mountain, turn the world around. We come from the mountain, living on the mountain, go back to the mountain, turn the world around. We come from the mountain, living on the mountain, go back to the mountain, turn the world around. Oh, oh, so is life.
Aha, so is life.
Oh, oh, so is life.
Aha.
Do you know who I am? Do I know who you are? See we one another clearly. Do we know who we are? Do you know who I am?
Do
you
know who I am?
See one another clearly. Do we know
who you are?
Do you know who I am?
Do we one another clearly.
Do we know
who we are? So is life about you, aha, so is
river wash the mountain, fire makes sunlight turn the world around.
Heart is of the river, body is the mountain, spirit is the sunlight turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around.
Do you know who I am? Do I know who you are? Another clearly, do we know who we are?
Do you know who I am?
Who I am?
See, we want another clearly. Do we know who we are?
Do you know who I am?
Do we want another clearly?
Do we know who we are?
Oh, so is life about you?
Ah,
so is life.
Oh,
so is life about you? Ah, so is life. Oh, so is life about you?
So yeah, there's a lot of talk in the chat room about my choice of that particular track, which is Harry Belafonte on one of the episodes of The Muppets. And it's a really great episode that's really worth watching on YouTube, because all of these African-style masks and puppets were made specifically for that episode. And it's actually one of my favorite songs in my sort of spiritual repertoire, because it's, who doesn't love a good round? And it's a really, really beautiful track that I think brings us back to so much of our essence, which is, do we know who we are? And that's really what the show is about, and the elements, and how big of a role the elements play in our lives. And I look forward to doing an episode in the future about the elements and their role in our spiritual evolution. And I'm really grateful for someone in the chat room mentioning familiars. That is another word that is used to describe what we are talking about today in terms of animal helping spirits, and this idea of familiars coming out of sort of neo-European, neo-Wiccan practices. Oftentimes, I would say sort of most popular idea of a familiar being a witch's cat that might join them in ritual, help them with their spells, let them know some intuitive information that they need to know regarding the world. Someone, an animal who's using their animal senses, that's what they're there for, to aid the human practitioner. So yeah, we have this idea of spirit animals, totem animals, animal helping spirits, and familiars. And this is a bit in contrast, and I don't know if this sort of dichotomy is popular. I might be the first person to be making this dichotomy, but this is a bit in contrast to what we find in folk magic, or really any kind of specifically magical practice that's really meant to achieve an intention. In the tradition of hoodoo root work, African-American folk magic, Southern conjure from the South, you do find very often the use of animal curios or zoological curios in the practice. Someone might take a chicken foot, for instance, and place something in the hand and tie it up. And this is now a talisman that is due to, obviously, the sympathetic view of tied a chicken foot around an object, say a coin. Now this is a money-saving talisman or a money-keeping kind of amulet. And then you also find such use of bones that may be ground up and included in a powder or included in an oil to help empower it. So obviously, this idea of working with animals and their parts as medicine that we are adding to our root work, that we're adding to our spells, our folk magic, is very popular and found around the world. But today, we're actually not emphasizing that so much as we are emphasizing the idea of animals as helping spirits. And I'm going to sort of make this dichotomy by making the difference between what I would call helping spirits and working spirits. So working spirits, again, I might be the first person to sort of use that term, to me are these spirits or allies or entities that we are turning to for help in a specific situation or ongoing, but they are not actually the spirits that have sort of been given to us by source. They might be incredible friends, incredible allies who play a huge role in our lives, but they are not actually given to us by source. They're not connected to us as intrinsically as a helping spirit might be. A good analogy might be sort of the difference between family and friends. And obviously, if for anyone who has friends, and I hope that we all do, sometimes friends are closer to you than your family members. And that happens, too, in this relationship between sort of working spirits and helping spirits. But helping spirits are sort of a reflection, a direct reflection of who you are and the potential that you have to reach and to live your soul's purpose, whereas working spirits don't necessarily fill that role. They might be extremely powerful allies in your life, but they're not necessarily here for that purpose. So, for instance, I work a lot with the Guatemalan folk saint, San Simon, Mashimon, and he is of tremendous importance to me. I've had the great privilege of having him in my life. He showed up in my life in a very unique time, and I have, and he's hilarious, and I've had the privilege of performing him in semi-possessory performance on stage. I work with him a great deal in my own work with clients and for myself, but he is not one of my helping spirits. He's a working spirit. He is not someone who is sort of soul tied to me in that way. He teaches me so much, but he is not soul tied to me, versus an ancestral helping spirit, someone who I actually incarnated with, someone who I actually incarnated with, and we made a bond. We said, sure, you're going to help me to do what I've come here to do on a very soul level, on a very purpose level. So that's a big difference there. And I'm also going to read a bit of something that my own partner wrote up about helping spirits. And he is an excellent shamanic practitioner. And what he wrote was, helping spirits are the spirits assigned to us to co-create our lives with. Whether you believe they are sent by God or source, a god or a goddess, ancestors, or some other power is unimportant. What is important is that they are here, waiting for us to wake up and start working with them, to embody our full potential. These can show up as animal spirits, plant spirits, mineral spirits, really in an animistic worldview, as the spirit of anything, including more human guides such as the master of the woods or the lady of the lake. But today we are talking about animal helping spirits. Helping spirits reflect your own power back to you. The things your animal helping spirits do for you, eventually, they'll teach you to do yourself. I love this sentence, the idea that helping spirits reflect your own power back to you, because so often we're talking about walking around feeling disempowered, feeling less than who we are. And so much of life is stepping up into that power, and sometimes that takes risks, for sure. That takes risks to believe that you are bigger than that thing that your mother called you when you were 7 years old, to believe that you are worthy of holding that power in a good way, in spite of watching people all over the world wield, quote-unquote, power in really horrible ways, to know that you can hold your power and live. There are so many experiences that I see in my practice of people who are afraid to pick up their power because of, for instance, past lives where they were killed for displaying their power. And that could be a magical power or simply the power of being a woman, for instance. How many women have been killed throughout history for simply being a woman with a voice? These things absolutely play a huge role in the ways in which we hold back our own power and choose not to display it for fear that we'll die. Continuing what my partner has so graciously written, helping spirits help you to navigate the unseen world. They often govern different processes in our life, whether protection of our physical body and our possessions, guiding us through initiations and initiatory periods in our lives, helping us to align with the essence of our soul's purpose. Probably one of the richest ways that our helping spirits can help us is by remembering that energy we agreed to come to this earth to embody, because they remember us when we were solely spirit. And something else that my partner actually just handed me a note with a little written note, which is really important to say, not using our power, no matter the reason why we have, on a conscious level or subconscious or unconscious level, have told ourselves, I'm not going to pick up this power. It could be a fear of death. It could be a fear of ridicule. It could be a fear of, oh, no, if I'm that powerful, that might be responsibility. Or if I'm not powerful, then what? Not picking up our power, not using our power, is an abuse of power. Not picking up our power, not using our power, is an abuse of power. I was coming back to this conversation again, making this dichotomy between helping spirits and working spirits, those spirits that are sort of assigned to us and reflecting our own power back to us, helping spirits, and those spirits that are our friends, that we are, you know, they may be reflecting other aspects of ourselves to ourselves, but they're not sort of cosmically assigned to us. We might have met them through incredible serendipity. We might work with them in extremely powerful ways, but they're our working spirits. They're not our helping spirits. And I use this dichotomy to sort of reflect this difference between animal helping spirits that are really sort of soul tied to us and the use of a, say, an animal curio in a spell for great effect, but not necessarily reflecting that. That sort of intrinsic connection, which is also, I think, a bit, that says a bit about folk magic and shamanism, which to me, I sort of walk this road between, but from a shamanic perspective out of which folk magic comes from, we're often talking not necessarily just about an intention that a person has set that they want to reach, they want to empower themselves, or they want to attract something to themselves, but we're talking about the medicine that sort of spirit or source or helping spirits are saying that this person needs. And we're also talking about the medicine that a person can turn to time and time and time again, or that a tribe or a specific group of people can return to toward remembering their purpose. We hear such names all the time as the Bear Clan, or the turtle people, or I belong to the swan people, in certain, you know, indigenous ethnographies, or even today, because indigenous people do live contemporarily, and there are these ancestral and familial ties to certain animals. And I can't speak to that particular experience, but I can speak to the fact that that continues to show up, that one can go to spirit and ask to see if there's a helping spirit, if there's an animal helping spirit that relates to a particular group or tribe. I actually have this experience in one of the traditions that I walk in. And that tradition is the Unnamed Path, which is a shamanic tradition for men who love men, founded by the very famous Hyperion, also known as the late Dr. E. And in that tradition, the members thereof are encouraged to find the animal tribe that they're a part of. And I'll be honest with you, when I first sort of heard that and Lou suggested, I believe, in the podcast that he, one of the podcasts he had recorded for the tradition, I thought, okay, that sounds weak, you know, kind of like, okay, that sounds kind of, you know, maybe that has something, you know, interesting in it, but who really cares? We're, you know, at that time I was sort of coming from this idea of power as it's something that I wield, it's something that I sprinkle, it's something that I, you know, it's a candle I light. Who wants to know about sort of like a nice sort of identity moniker? And what I found was going on that journey, that specific journey to ask, well, who, what animal tribe in this particular cosmology am I a part of, actually left me in tears because it told me so much about my soul's purpose as an individual and in this cosmology. It was foolish of me to have waited so long because it's something that I refer to time and time again in my life. For instance, that particular journey led me to knowing that in that cosmology, I belong to the monkey tribe. And what that meant was that I have a particular medicine that speaks to making sure that everyone is equidistant from the center in the circle. Making sure that everyone is gathered together and feels connected to the center of the circle equally. And it has shown up time and time again, opportunities, vehicles via which I can live that soul's purpose, vehicles for that purpose of bringing together people and helping them to all feel connected to the center of the circle or to source. And maybe a helpful sort of analogy to that is Eddie, who Dr. E. Hyperion his helping spirit, his animal totem in that cosmology was the cheetah. And the cheetah was known, is known for, just like a cheetah, running as fast as they can to the edge and bringing people in. Whether or not they'd save me, they'd say, whether or not they're going to stay is a whole other story, but I have the medicine of going very, very far, very, very fast, and bringing people in. And I actually mentioned this once in an interview that I had on Candelo Quimbisa's show, Candelo's Corner, shortly after Eddie passed away, because we were discussing the incredible impact that they had, that Eddie had on the world at such a young age, that here were all of these people who had been so intensely influenced by him, that every time he learned something, he would learn something and teach it, learn something and teach it, learn something and immediately pass that information on to other people. That's such a reflection of sort of cheetah medicine. Whereas for me, with sort of the monkey, general monkey, not a specific monkey, but there's this sort of idea of dexterity, of community, of, you know, semi-human way of bringing together community, and moving with a certain element of dexterity there. So that's sort of my experience of the way in which an animal helping spirit can relate to a tribal or group affiliation and can help members in that tribe understand some of their soul's purpose as it relates to the larger community, to know that you are sort of the monkey or exemplifying a monkey in a situation is helpful, because then you can stop trying to be the cheetah. And you can also recognize when opportunities show up that, oh, wow, this is so in alignment with who I am. This is so in alignment with who I've come here to be. Let me take this opportunity. Let me be that which I've come here to be. So, of course, that speaks to the sort of tribal and group affiliation, but what about the personal affiliation? Well, I love memes as much as the next person, these highly addictive things that we send out on Facebook and other social media platforms. And a very prevalent one that I'm sure we've all come across is, what is your spirit animal? And we take the quiz and we say, oh, of course I'm an otter. Obviously, I love to, you know, lay around in between water and land, ha ha ha. And it's funny, and we share them, and we love it, actually, because we love, you know, again, coming back to this poem by Stephanie Kaza, we are not islands unto ourselves. We need to feel this connection. We need to feel intertwined. This is not a hobby. This is not a side project. This is not a side dish of life. This is the main course. Knowing our direct connection, knowing that our medicine, who we are, is directly reflected in plants, animals, and other helping spirits. This is the main dish. This is the steak on the plate. This feeling of intertwinedness, knowing that who we are is resonant across the board. But, of course, we're sort of turning to this quiz that has a limited amount of options. They have maybe, you know, 10 animals. There's far more than 10 animals in the world. And we're, you know, and we find some resonance, obviously. You know, we like that giraffe. We love giraffes. And, hey, this, you know, this quiz told me I am a giraffe. But there's obviously sort of deeper techniques and techniques that don't take a lot of time, techniques that actually are so surface. Exemplify the fact that the veil between us and the spirit world is extremely thin, so thin that it's non-existent. I'm talking about shamanic journeying. I'm also talking about guided visualization. I'm sure I could find 10, you know, power animal, spirit animal guided visualizations online within the next 10 seconds, and I'm sure that every single one of them would be very helpful in any person listening to this show finding and connecting with an animal helping spirit. Beyond connecting with them, that's another story, but at least finding out what one is, yes, absolutely. I'm sure that all 10 of them will be great in leading you to that. I actually have a story of a friend of mine who actually is from an indigenous background in the Pacific Northwest, and she and I went to college together. And the story is that she was having a day where she thought, you know, I'm going to play around with some sort of psychotropic substances. And she was moving through the day, you know, on the psychotropic substance with some other friends, and everything was lively and serendipitous. And she says to a friend, "The next animal I see is my spirit animal." And the friend laughs and says, "Okay." And the moment she says that, a raccoon comes out from behind a garbage dump, a dumpster, and looks at her and continues walking. And this friend of mine breaks down into tears and is saying, "Oh, my God, I'm a raccoon. Oh, my God, my helping spirit is a raccoon." And I think that the tears weren't entirely sadness. I think that they were probably a mixture of awe and maybe a small amount of sadness, but also obviously she's on psychotropic substances. But it was actually really funny when she told me this because, you know, this had happened to her about a year earlier, and we were able to reflect on how much this was true. This is not, by the way, this is not me suggesting that people go on psychotropic substances to go find their animal helping spirits. You don't need to. But we were able to laugh and reflect on how much this was true because this friend of mine has a gift for finding things in the most random places. We lived together, actually, and the house, the living room, was always filled to the brim with costume pieces and clothing items and accessories that she had found going through lost and found or free piles around the school. And this friend of mine was an incredible dresser, not incredible like, Donna Karan or Calvin Klein, incredible as in, oh my gosh, her uniqueness, her ability to find things that, A, fit her, God bless her, but also that were just so cool was just bar none. So here, that's sort of one way in which we're talking about how animal spirits reflect our own sort of personal medicine and soul's purpose. And another element here, which I find really interesting, because this sort of brings me to the place where I sort of keep talking about walking this road between folk magic and shamanic practice, and it is this sort of ancestral connection. So when I am doing a setting of lights, and this is something that I often do for clients, it is found, it's sort of a tradition coming out of Hoodoo root work, coming out of the spiritualist church movement, sort of a simple spell in which a glass encased candle is fixed or dressed with oils and herbs, roots, other botanicals, for a particular petition. Someone wants to attract money. Someone wants their roads open. It's not going to be a large spell. It's sort of just putting this candle on this petition for this thing to happen that manifests in my life. And one of the great things about setting of lights is that after the candle finishes burning, you get so much information from what is left in the glass, which is sort of known as seromantic divination, which is divination by candle wax or by candle remains. So when I'm reading the inside of a candle, of a glass-encased vigil, and a candle that's finished burning, I'm able to sort of then report to my client, well, this is what we can now expect based on your petition, or here are some follow-up, you know, ideas that you might want to take based on that. And not all the time, but sometimes animals will show up in the fog in the glass or in the wax in the glass. And those are some of my favorite times because it's really, to me, this place where the connection between shamanism and animism and folk magic meet. And it was actually just a few weeks ago that I had burned a number of candles for a client, and I think there were four of them, and they were all regarding this client's business. That there would be success in her business, that she would attract new clients, that the interviews that she would be doing on behalf of her business would go forth successfully, and they all burned clean. However, there was a bit of fog in each one, and each one had some element that spoke to an owl. I just saw in the fog of the glass, it was like there's these two eyes that are peering out, and the sense I get is owl. And I would sort of just write that up, and I'd go to the next candle, and I'd say, there's the burn clean, and this is a sort of a great petition, but there's an owl. And it was candle after candle, and then one of them, I on one side, there's a bit of fog, and I said, I'm just getting this strong element. I see a woman's face of something regarding your grandmother, but then when I look to the side, it looks a bit like an owl. So I don't know what that's about, but there's this sort of grandmother-owl conversation going on, and not grandmother owl in terms of a sort of new age throwback to a pan-American Indian idea of grandmother owl, but no, your grandma and an owl, and I don't know why they're in cahoots in this ceremonial divination, but they are. And I send them all to her, and even I doubt myself sometimes, and I'm just saying, I don't know what that's about, but, you know, maybe I'm having an off day. And she immediately emails me back and says, huh, you're always on point. My grandmother collected owls. Thanks. And it was just such a profound moment. And I was just staring at my computer screen like, this is amazing. It's just amazing. Now, what I was hoping was that, and I do believe I said this to the client, I said, you should go talk to Owl. Obviously, Owl isn't showing up just for shits and giggles. Owl is showing up because Owl was saying, I have some medicine to bring to you. I have something to say to you about your business efforts. There's something about me and the way I move through the world that you should take note of, or that you, it would serve you to exemplify. And we'll get to that sort of, it would serve you to exemplify in just a moment. And I hope that she did that. I don't know if she did. But it was, whether or not she did, it was definitely a very profound moment in my practice of seeing sort of this, again, this ancestor-animal connection. So this conversation of exemplifying animal spirits, why would we want to exemplify an animal? I don't have feathers, and I don't want to smell like an animal. Part of that is animals help as helping spirits help to make things simple, or at least simpler. We as humans can over-rationalize, overthink, overanalyze when the message, whether that's a message that we are sort of an omen, an augury omen in our lives, or how we go about picking up our power, is so simple. And we're running around, we're saying, oh, spirit, I don't understand that dream, and it was just so complicated, or I went on that shamanic journey, and I don't know, there was a crow that picked me up, and it dropped me in a volcano, and it just didn't make any sense to me. And animal helping spirits are there to say, actually, it's so simple, because animals aren't running around asking themselves what it means to be an owl. They're just being it. And our analytical skills are something that we prize so much about being human, and they are worth prizing, but we must also recognize when they get in the way, when our heads and the use of our brains and our analytical skills are actually getting in the way of our well-being. We talk about this in terms of sort of Zen meditation. You've got to calm the monkey mind, got to bring it down, because we've gotten to the point of overanalyzing, or getting in our way. Our analytical skills can absolutely get in the way of us picking up our power and using it, being who we have come here to be. And animal helping spirits, when they show up in our lives, are an incredible asset here, because they help to simplify things so much. They're not asking questions about who they've come here to be. They're simply being it. They're being who they are, with all the power that they have and the habitat they live in, with the fangs or claws or teeth that they have, and they are using them. And that is it. And we must get clear around when we have fangs and claws and teeth and must simply use them and how to use them and not try to be that person over there with that particular kind of feather. We marvel. We watch it on the Discovery Channel and Planet, and we marvel at all of the ways in which these animals and insects are moving through the world, camouflaging themselves and one-upping each other, evolving because this particular bat knows how to smell it, so now it's going to turn into something that looks like a rose. It's incredible. These creatures are incredible, and they're doing it all based on instinct, based on internal instinct, evolutionary traits. And there's so much that we don't have to think about that we can actually get out of our own way simply by letting go and being and operating on that sort of instinctual level, the part of us that simply knows what we are, simply knows what we've come here to do. So our animal helping spirits can help us to tap into that and truly be that.
Denko, Denko, Musolu, Nakun, Denko,
listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters, spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running conjure show on the planet and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner. Starring Candelo Cambisa and Malik Cambisa, this is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, with special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front-page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burmeshave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company is based in sunny Forestville, California, providing traditional spiritual products for remediating all kinds of conditions. Locate them online at luckymojo.com or visit them in person to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. Welcome back to On Sacred Ground. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and today we are discussing animal helping spirits. And today is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, thoughts, comments on the topic and would like to come in on the show and discuss, please do. The number is 657-383-0525. That's 657-383-0525. And please dial 1 so that I know that you're in the queue and would like to come on as a guest. So in the chat room on Blog Talk Radio, one of the things that has been coming up is this conversation of, well, where do animals helping spirits come from? Are they sort of just in the invisible realm, or are they ever manifest? And that actually made me realize I've been talking about, I'm always talking about people learning these sort of skills of visualization, shamanic journeying, and trusting themselves when they have experience in these practices, when they have experiences in these practices. But that's actually living out one of the main ways that people discover animal helping spirits or helping spirits at all, which is you keep coming across them. They're stalking you. They're stalking you. Every time you open a book, there's a jaguar. You walk down the street and there's a big picture of a jaguar. And you're just like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's going on? That has at least been my experience of encountering many of the helping spirits that I walk with. And then I've been able to sort of take that cue from my everyday life and then go into, say, some trance experience and ask, and trance experiences are for everyone. They are a biological right for every human being. Again, guided visualization, shamanic journeying, etc. So then going into these and asking, can I talk with Jaguar? Can I talk with that spirit, that entity, that symbol that I keep seeing over and over again to find out what is going on, to find out the medicine that that spirit or that symbol or that icon has for me. So often, because we are living in Midgard, we're living in the middle world, we're living in the 3D world, these helping spirits are making themselves manifest here. And that's really a prime example of how, again, the veil between us and the spirit world is so thin as to not exist at all. One of those helping spirits, actually, in my own court, is Butterfly. And I came across Butterfly because I never felt like I personally had any affinity with butterflies. I did not grow up loving butterflies. They were simply around. But what I found was over a period of about a month, I kept seeing them everywhere in very unique circumstances. One day I was sort of driving through Texas, and it was a lonely road, it was daytime, and all I remember, it was almost like I was driving through a flood of them. They were just everywhere. I had never experienced anything like it, and it just felt very, very prominent. It felt very ominous. It was ominous. It felt like an omen. It was like there's something going on that I need to pay attention to. And shortly thereafter, I was walking down the street, and it was actually very cold. It was winter. And I looked to my right, and in a store's display window was a butterfly, obviously a human creation of a butterfly, but it was still a butterfly. So that matters. it's not just, you know, when you see the actual animal. So many of us have animal helping spirits that we don't live near, that simply do not show up in our climate. So seeing them in a book, seeing them in a piece of art, seeing them in a store display window, that counts. Eddie, my late mentor, he would say when, you come across an animal in a sort of serendipitous way, three times the charm. That's when you know I need to go find out what's going on here and go talk to this helping spirit in journey or in a trance state and find out, what is the medicine? Why are you showing up? What is the medicine that you have for me? And how do I be in good relationship with you? Because that is also key when it comes to helping spirits and working spirits. We always want to be in good relationship with these spirits. We don't want to take more than we've given. We want to make offerings and give thanks and sing songs and dance. And because they're giving us so much, not just in terms of information or in terms of, identity placeholders, but actually energy. They're actually giving us their energy to help us to step into our power more and more and more. And that being in relationship, actually, being in good relationship, can also be a sign of a helping spirit, because something else that sort of coming up in the chat room is this experience that people have of themselves or friends or family members who have such a tremendous affinity for a specific animal that they've sort of made it their life mission to take care of that animal and to advocate for that animal's well-being on the earth. We're going to be having certain individuals who are moving through the world in that bold, beautiful way on the show in the future. And I would definitely say that that's often a cue or clue as well to an animal helping spirit being present in that person's life, that someone is so taken by, they relate on such a deep, empathic level to that animal that so much of their energy that they are using in this world is used toward that animal's well-being on the earth. These things are tied together, absolutely. Conservancy and animal welfare in the world and animal helping spirits, because if I have a butterfly helping spirit and butterflies are disappearing like mad on the earth, possibly a very good offering I can make would be to an animal to a butterfly conservation group. I need to support this spirit's manifestation in the earth because that spirit is supporting me. So these things are absolutely related. But getting back to butterfly as a helping spirit for me in particular, it was something that I became aware of. I did not have the tools or I didn't have the questions. I didn't really know how to journey to a helping spirit and make a strong relationship and really benefit from it at the time. But butterfly was walking with me, and that was cool. You know, it was just sort of cool, and I had a picture of butterfly on an altar, and that was cool. And sometimes sugar water went out. I didn't really work with it too much with butterfly as a helping spirit, but I knew that butterfly was there. What changed and what actually had a big impact on the way I saw animal helping spirits was when I was actually making a very big move. I was making a move from New York to the Bay Area, and it was in autumn. It was actually a very cold autumn day. I remember wearing it. So when I was at JFK, the John F. Kennedy Airport here in New York on my way to California, I was really surprised to see a butterfly flitting around the entrance to JFK. And it was something that I just sort of took note of. And I said, okay, that's... It was suddenly too cold of a day for that to feel normal or usual or even possible. And, you know, some odd hours later, I'm on the West Coast, and I come out of the airport, San Francisco airport, and I step outside to smoke a cigarette, and I'm waiting for my friend to come pick me up for my new life there. And as I'm there, standing outside of the airport, there's a butterfly flitting around, and it was really interesting, and it was just this thought of, wow, that's what a bridge here. But I didn't really think much more of it. I mean, I have a lot of serendipitous things happen in my life, and I see a lot of unusual stuff every day. It was just, okay, you can't write every single weird thing down. So it was a few months later that I actually journeyed, and I was journeying for myself just to find out some information in my life. And butterfly was not on my mind. But what happened was I'm in the journey, and butterfly completely hijacks the journey. A huge butterfly just steps into my view and is like, yo, hold up. You don't even understand. I protected you in that journey. I am the one who has made this. It was a very serendipitous move. It was a very risky move for me to have made at the time. It's very scary for me. I did not have a lot of resources to do it, but I was amazed at how serendipitous it was. It worked out so well. And here Butterfly was saying, me, you are in debt to me. You have now become in debt to me, and because I'm the one who made this such a fortuitous experience for you. I helped usher this journey for you. And it was very interesting because it was in that moment that I really became aware, like, oh, wow, butterflies, you know, obviously beauty, transformation, coming out of the cocoon, blah, blah, blah. But this was such an integral moment because of migration and the conversation around butterflies and their migratory patterns, and how butterfly had just helped me migrate across the United States. And knowing, again, sort of being presented with this conversation of, this is real, this isn't a game, this isn't, you know, playing potsy, and I can absolutely, you know, make offerings to helping spirits and put up altars for funsies, but then there's also, like, this is real. I have this helping spirit who, you know, this move could have been a disaster. I absolutely did not have the resources to make this move. It made no sense for me to get on that plane and have all of my things shipped across the country, because I hadn't really had the resources to find a new home there. I was simply going based on dreams and divinations that told me I had to go. What had not shown up was that one of the reasons why it was going to work out so well was because Butterfly, the helping spirit, was going to be helping me do so. So one of the ways in which I tell people, and that I knew at the time, that one could work with animal helping spirits is by embodying them. That our bodies are actually an incredible offering to our helping spirits, especially animal helping spirits, because, again, this whole idea of embodiment and instinct and them being in the body, they're being themselves fully. So one can put on 45 minutes of music and call an animal helping spirit into their body and begin to mimic the movements of that animal and possibly even visualize that animal before them. And just as they're dancing, imagining that that animal helping spirit is merging with their own body, and then being sort of just letting go and telling that animal helping spirit, dance me. And the thing is that we actually get so much out of that experience, too. It's not just a sacrifice or an offering, but when our animal helping spirits and other helping spirits sort of ride us in that way, it actually moves energy in our own body and system around to help us get out of our own way. We learn so much about the power that helping spirit is reflecting back to us and helping us to unlock, because we are interacting with them in a visceral way. We're asking them to step in our bodies, and we're saying, dance me. You can also say, show me how to get out of my own way. So you're calling in lion, and you're on all fours, and you're roaring like a lion. And yeah, I know this is, we don't want to act too crazy. We don't want to roar like a lion and crawl around on all fours, because our lives are really working with all this overanalyzing, right? So we don't want to do something different. Come on, do something different. We're engaged. We're talking about deep engagement. This is what it means to be human, to get out of our heads, get into our bodies, and embody the intertwinedness that has been going on in the world. If we continue to believe that this is about, if we continue to believe that real activism is online petitions and simply throwing money at things, we're not going to win. We need to embody these ideals of intertwinedness and interconnectedness. This is a great way of embodying that. Stop trying to feel safe, because we are not in a safe position. So call in your animal helping spirits and dance them. Just do it. You get so much out of it. Not to mention that you'll get so much insight into them and where your lives intersect. When you call in your animal helping spirits or your other helping spirits and dance them. You might even be led to make a mask of them. These are practices that I teach in person. And, side note, my partner also teaches, who is a shamanic practitioner. And, announcement, he's actually teaching a workshop, if you're in the New York area, called Working with Helping Spirits. Go to shamanbomb.com/events. That's shamanbomb.com/events. It will be taking place this upcoming March, I believe on March 8th. It is a workshop fee of $30, which is so minimal in relation to this gigantic workshop, which will actually be involving mask making and dancing over a number of hours. The tools you will walk away with from this workshop will change your life. So if you are listening and you are in the New York or Tri-State area, this is one of the best decisions that you can make, especially if you are inspired by the words of this show and the messages that I'm sort of trying to help bring, that I've been told I sort of need to bring. So going back to this particular experience with Butterfly, I'm dancing, I call in Butterfly, I'm dancing Butterfly, and I had a really big room to do so, and things are going well. I've danced an animal helping spirit before. I'm getting some insight. And then what happens is I actually begin to cry, and it makes me nervous because I know from that time in my life and how my energy ran at that time, that when I began to cry, that was a sign that there were dead people present who wanted to step into my body and use me as a medium. And I was not feeling it. But for it to show up in this particular moment, which had never happened before while I was dancing an animal helping spirit, was really, and I said to my helping spirit, my other helping spirits, okay, I'm doing this ritual. I feel like I'm already, you know, hardcore multitasking, but you want me to multitask even more? All right, just make sure that whatever's coming through is sort of for the, you know, that I'm safe here. So what happened was that there was the energy of a Euro-American man who stepped into my body, and he began to dance me. He began to dance as well. And he was dancing in honor of Butterfly. And he was doing this kind of funny dance. It wasn't a very good dance from an aesthetic standpoint, but it was a dance. It was I'm enjoying, you know, Butterfly. And I just sort of had this moment of, wow, Butterfly is beloved by so many people. And then he sort of left. And then another spirit came into my body, and she was a Chicana woman. Actually, she was a spirit of an indigenous Mexicana woman, and who was doing actually a very specific movement using my body in honor of Butterfly. And in that moment, I knew that this woman's name was Butterfly. That possibly, when she was born, what I imagine is that a butterfly went flying by when she was born, and someone said, and that's her name. And her name was Butterfly, and she was moving in, I don't know what particular sort of tribe, but it was, the sense I had in me was there is a woman, and she is very, very old, and she is from this continent, and she is honoring Butterfly, with whom she had a tremendous connection with, to the extent that her name was Butterfly. And that was just really beautiful and emotional, and also brought me to the moment of realizing, wow, Butterfly has so much to do with migration. Think about what's going on in terms of American, the USA, and immigration issues, immigration policy, and how many people are left in such difficult circumstances due to American immigration policy, which really cannot be talked about without talking about American imperialism in Mexico and Latin America. But that's another episode. But come to think of it, there are folks who are on the front lines of American immigration policy issues, and many of those sort of posters and promotional materials show butterflies. They show butterflies flying over the fences and the walls that the U.S. has put up. Butterfly has been a helping spirit and a guide and a totem for so many reasons and causes. And that woman moved out of my being. And then the spirit of a more contemporary woman who I knew to have been queer while she was alive moved into my body. Each of these people dancing Butterfly, using my body to dance this helping spirit and give honor to them, something that I had never heard of or could never have expected. But me allowing my body to be used in that way, in a safe manner, because they asked me, helping this to happen in a good way, in a safe way, if I were to be a vessel for this, simply astounding. And this lesbian, the spirit of a queer woman who used my body then to dance butterfly in her own way, brought even greater insight to the role that butterfly has played as an icon around the world. If you are a gay man or a queer person, you might have been called what, you know, the slur, it would be considered a slur very often, una mariposa. You are a faggot. You are a butterfly. You're not moving manly enough. You're not, exemplifying gender stereotypes in our culture, the gender binary. And butterfly being a slur for that kind of person. But then, of course, as marginalized people always do, take the terms, the words that people have used against them and own them so that they cannot be hurt by them. So I am quite sure, just as the term, just as many terms that have their origins in being used as slurs, I'm sure that there are groups of queer Latino people around the world who affectionately use the term mariposa to refer to themselves and each other. Yet again, another role, place where butterflies reign is seen as a, sort of being a placeholder, being a protector, being an identity connector. And then the last thing that really hit me, and here I was living in the Bay Area, was another form of migration, the migration of queer people from rural areas in, flatlands, heartland America, from rural areas and from places where they might not feel connected to other queer people, and they might feel like an outsider, and their migration to places like San Francisco to find their tribe, their migration to places that feel like home because there are people like them, and how Butterfly also watches over that. And at the end of having about three or four spirits move through me in dance their honor to Butterfly in their own way, they left me exhausted. But when it was over, the presence of Butterfly was so strong in the room. It was almost like I looked I turned to one of the walls in my room, and I could just see that, and I had extremely high ceilings at this time. I was living in a loft. And I could see that Butterfly was taking up the whole wall, that this reverence to all of the ways that this animal helping spirit had guided humans as individuals, humans in different parts of their processes, humans in group affiliations, guiding, protecting, connecting, had just been such an honor to this animal spirit that now was just reverberating through my space. I had thought I was going to talk about so many other things, and obviously, always, we need a part two, and that's great because that just means that we're covering a lot of ground. But I hope that this share, that this these sort of case notes and this sharing of my own personal experience with these helping spirits are an inspiration to ask for an animal helping spirit. That's one thing I haven't gone into just yet, just how in a shamanic practice, at least in my own shamanic practice, and I'm sure in other sort of neo-shamanic practices, how animal spirits just, you know, show up for a client. We have this idea of power animals and power animal retrievals, which we didn't get to, but I look forward to talking about. But we all have access to animal helping spirits, and they are not things that we choose. They choose us, or source chooses them for us. So go meet yours. Go meet yours and ask them, what is the medicine that you have for me? What do I need to do to be in good relationship with you? And often they don't need much, a bit of tobacco in a cup, a bit of corn, some libations of water. Take those notes, believe your experience, believe yourself, and then go dance them. Dance them and ask them, how do I get out of my own way? Show me how I'm abusing my power by not stepping into it. Show me how I'm abusing my power, period. And thank them, because the potential to step even more into our soul's purpose that they provide us with is great. And thank you so much for listening in today. This has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience, in which place plays a primary role. Until then, keep a light in your window for courage in our times. I'll be keeping a light in mine for you. Someone is-